This Sunday and next Sunday, I'm going to share with you some of the things that I learned while serving as a hospital chaplain. As part of the training for ministry, students are required to be a chaplain for at least one unit, which is 10 weeks full time. We learn in our chaplain training about what the experience is for people who are in the hospital, and we learn how to help them and support them while they're there. People who are hospitalized are outside of their safe and comfortable environment. They're often in a time of crisis, often in pain. Even with elective surgery, people feel fearful and insecure about what comes next. It's a very difficult and vulnerable time. In the chaplain training, you learn to engage with people during this time, to listen to them, to find openings for deeper meaning, find ways that you can support them and offer them spiritual support. In my time there, I found that people struggling to make meaning of their situation fell into three different categories. The first category was the people that I call will of God accepting. These people had a tremendous faith in this God of theirs, this God with a plan. And they would say, I'm in pain, I'm afraid, but I believe that God is all powerful and all compassionate and all knowing. I will accept and submit to his plan. The second category of people were the struggling with the will of God. These people believed in a God who had a plan. They believed that their circumstance was God's will, but they were struggling. Why would God want this thing to happen to me? Why would God want me to be suffering? Then there was a third group of people. These people also struggled, but they didn't really have an active vision of God, and they didn't have a religion or a spiritual context, but were struggling to make sense of what happened to them. I remember one particular individual in this category, a man in his 40s. He'd come in, a medical crisis, he'd had emergency surgery. I visited him just a few hours after his surgery. He was in shock and in pain, and was also realizing that he was going to be facing some fairly significant limits in his life going forward. He's trying to sort it out for himself. And what he said to me was, everything happens for a reason. Now, since I was a chaplain, I've heard that phrase many, many more times in many places. How many of you have heard the phrase everything? You heard it today, actually. Everything happens for a reason. I think people use it when challenges or difficulties arise to express their struggle. And I've given it quite a bit of consideration. And I think that perhaps everything happens for a reason could be a secular form of the will of God. I'm not confident that the people who use this phrase really understand what the statement implies, that somehow there's some plan, whether or not God has the plan, there's some ordained plan that this thing that happened to them has fit into. There's a force that causes things to happen. Some way that the universe is structured so that this thing has happened to them. Now, we know that the idea that there's a plan or that there's a God with a plan is not consistent with our UU values. In fact, it's one of the major tenets of how we evolved from the Christian faith, because we believe in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, one of our principles. So you can see how it's inconsistent to believe that there's a plan and everything happens according to this plan is inconsistent with a free and responsible search. But nonetheless, I think there's something to be learned from considering this phrase a little more. Everything happens for a reason. What could be some of the reasons? Maybe you deserve it. Maybe it's karma. Maybe something you did something good or you did something bad, and this thing that happened to you is because you deserve it. When I was preparing this sermon, I kept thinking about the sound of music. And you're probably thinking about it too, since Rachel's been playing from it. And I've learned that when a little thought flits into my mind, I need to honor it and see where it's going to lead me, because often it takes me to a really interesting place. So there's this moment in The Sound of Music. Let me see if I can set the stage here. Maria has left. She's realized she's in love with the captain. How many have seen The Sound of Music? The real Sound of Music. I'm dating myself here, aren't I? So Maria goes back. Maria goes back to the Abbey, remember, and then she comes back, and there's this moment. She realizes she's in love. She's all upset about it. And then she comes back, and there's this moment where she and the captain are in that gazebo in the moonlight. Remember that scene with the gazebo in the moonlight? They dance, and they kiss, and they realize their love for each other. It's this beautiful romantic moment. And then Maria sings a song. She sings, "Perhaps I had a wicked childhood. Perhaps I had a miserable youth. But somewhere in my wicked, miserable past, I must have done something good." That's it? That's it? The beautiful romantic moment, your love, and you talk about your wicked past? So apparently she's saying she's really a terrible person. She's wicked, right? But she did something good, and that good thing resulted in this happiness that she was having. I actually think unconsciously some of us carry around this belief. In fact, I think our culture, our American culture, somehow carries around this belief. You can see it now in some of the debates about welfare and the haves and the have-nots. There's some sense that people who are homeless, people who are challenged, people without health insurance have done something to deserve that, or they've not done something that they should have done that resulted in it. I think there's a portion of our culture that believe that these people deserve their circumstance. Similarly, you hear people say they worked hard for what they got, the old Horatio Alger story, which is, you know, really one of the tenets of our culture. They worked hard, and their success is a result of hard work. A lot of people work hard, and a lot of people succeed, but some people who work hard don't succeed. Now, some of this thinking of hard work and what you deserve, comes from our Puritan roots. And the Puritans were actually the forebearers of the Unitarians. Our Unitarian branch emerged from the Puritans. The Puritans believe that some people were chosen by God for heaven, and some people were chosen by God to be damned. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. This is the essence of Calvinism. For the Puritans, they spend a lot of time checking each other out to see who might be a visible saint, which means God's favor shone on you. And so you could conclude by that you were destined for heaven. You can see the flip side of that. And you can see how this has been passed down and still somewhat alive in our 20th century thinking, particular to the United States in a lot of ways. You won't find some of this same thinking in other cultures. Now, again, this idea that some of us are saved and some of us are worthy and some are damned is clearly inconsistent with our UU values. And it was this theology that spawned the universalist side of our faith, because the universalists spoke out against this thinking and said, all are worthy of God's love, hence our inherent worth and dignity of every person. So I punched a few holes in this everything happens for a reason, explored it a little bit. Let's go to the flip side. There's no reason, there's no plan, there's no structure, there's nothing. Everything is random. There's no greater meaning to anything. Now, I think if you believe that, you probably wouldn't be here in church today. I could not live my life without some sense of a greater meaning and purpose. As humans, we need to believe that things are not random. We like to believe that our suffering has meaning and that our challenges are not without value. Finding meaning and developing our values is the challenge of our lives. Richard Niebuhr, a 20th century theologian, says, "To deny the reality of a supernatural being called God is one thing, but to live without confidence in some center of value or without loyalty to a cause is another. To live with confidence about a center of value, to develop a center of value, and to live in this confidence is called faith." In our lives, we're making meaning every day, every minute. We're bombarded with images, sounds, thoughts, feelings, other people, emotions. Our brain and our body have to sort through all these things and somehow organize them to make meaning for us. As we go through our lives, we create our own reality by how we make meaning from what happens to us, how we respond to what we see and experience. As we grow and mature, this meaning can become deeper and broader and can include more and more experiences, more people, more things outside of ourselves. We have a greater capacity to take in and process things. It's like weaving a fabric of our lives, a fabric from our experiences. This is faith development. Everything happens for a reason. I think the meaning of that phrase, the deeper meaning, is that we work to make sense of what happens and find the meaning. Everything happens, and then we try to capture it, find how this challenge fits within our lives. When our lives don't unfold as we expect, we have to reorient ourselves. We have to rethink. We have to mend a torn hole in our fabric or weave in different colors in this fabric of faith that we're building. I remember when I was in my 20s, I had all these grand plans of how my life was going to unfold. I was going to accomplish this by this time, and then the next thing would be this, and the next thing would be this. Perhaps you have this own narrative when you were younger. Of course, as life does, things don't always unfold like we planned. With each roadblock that I faced, I was in a position of reformulating who I was, how I interacted with the world, how I related to my future, and how I responded to other opportunities that were presented. This is the work of faith development in young people. This is what we do in our 20s as we mature and grow. Thank God it gets easier. Because we learn and our ability to encompass more, our ability to process more, evolves and matures. As parents, we like to think that our children, or we like to hope that our children are going to have smooth sailing with their lives. We don't want them to face a lot of difficulties. We don't want them to make the same mistakes that we made. But we know that these difficulties and mistakes are what form a person. Making meaning out of our challenges is what makes a stronger person who's able to take in a broader sense of the world. I think this is what people mean when they say everything happens for a reason. They're striving to integrate their experience into their own faith. It's a reordering process, reanalyzing, reconstructing. It's a dialogue between self and world. Now, my friend in the hospital, my everything happens for a reason friend, was steadily getting better. I saw him a few days after his surgery. He was up and about, using a walker. His face was a lot brighter. He seemed more energized. He'd spent time processing his experience. He was able to see now how his life was going to take a different path and make some sense about how he was going to go forward. He was finding some clarity in what happened, some significance, and seeing an opening about how he was going to move forward with his life. Finding that opening, that moment of new and deeper awareness, that seeing of the possibilities of your life, is a form of grace. That opening, the spark of the divine, the lure to seeing that your life can be more than what it was before that thing happened to you. Now, I want to go back to The Sound of Music. Let's wind the movie backwards from the gazebo scene where Maria, it's the Baroness, is that the name of the person? The Baroness who talks her out of leaving and go back to the Abbey. And she goes into Reverend Mother. And remember that scene in the Reverend Mother's office? Maria comes in, she's on the floor, and the Reverend Mother stands at the window. She's got the big wimple. Remember that wimple thing? How do you talk with that thing on? She's got this big wimple. Climb every mountain! She sings that, right? You remember that scene? So in that scene, the Reverend Mother says something to Maria. Something that I think we hear quite a bit in our culture. Maria feels like her life is at an end. She doesn't think she can be a nun. She can't go back to the captain. And the Reverend Mother says, when God closes a door, he opens a window. It's a lovely idea. I love that idea. I strongly relate to that idea. But our UU theology doesn't have a God who opens a window or closes a door. It does. We don't believe in a divine plan that says which window should be open and which door should be closed. So who opens the window? I do believe that those windows get opened. We are not alone in our life. I believe that we open windows and close doors for each other. We are co-creating the world. We are co-creating our lives. Sometimes you will open the window for someone else, and sometimes someone else will open a window for you. This is how we weave the interdependent web of all existence. Everything does happen for a reason. The reason is things you do and how they affect other people, what other people do and how they affect you, co-creating this world, weaving the world together. Now, this web that we live in, that we're co-creating, is very complex. Many forces are interacting, and we know that very little of these things are within our control. We also know that some of the things that we personally do can have direct and positive outcomes that we see, or can have direct negative outcomes that we see as well. My friend in the hospital knew this. Deep in his heart, he knew that the way he had treated his body was part of the reason that he had his medical emergency. However, in cases of earthquakes, tornadoes, acts of God, shall we say, There's not a individual cause or relationship to that. These are just the forces of the world or the universe coming together in challenging ways. But as humans, we try to make sense of those events. In the Philippines, recently, there were hurricanes that wiped out entire communities. You don't try to make sense of the event of that hurricane. If you want to know the reason why that hurricane happened, you can talk to a meteorologist. They will tell you exactly why that hurricane happened. But that's not what we're interested in as humans. We're interested in understanding the meaning of that event in our lives. You hear people after some tragedy where they've lost everything saying, I understand what life is about. I'm feeling gratitude for what was saved. I realize what's meaningful to me. This is meaning-making in the deepest and most profound way, and it's hard not to be tremendously moved when you watch those people go through that process. Humans are driven to make meaning in the most difficult and dire circumstances. In the book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl talks about people suffering from the atrocities of the Nazis and how they would strive to find meaning, to make sense of what was happening to them and their situation. This is what we do as humans. Life's challenges create opportunities for us to learn and grow. And with each opportunity for meaning-making, we can become more spiritually mature and have a better sense of our role and responsibility in the world. The fabric of our faith can become denser, brighter, richer. We are open to the presence of grace. Everything happens for a reason. I'm with it. I agree. We are the reason. We make the reason and we make sense of the reason. All of us. within the intertwined web of our lives, interdependent with other beings, with the natural forces of the earth, and indeed with the universe. We are co-creating this world that we know, developing and living our faith, where we each close doors and open windows for each other, leading to richer lives and deeper meaning for us all. May it be so.